Okay, so yes, we are still on Daf Chaf. We are now on Amud Bet, and we did not move a huge amount last time. Part of the reason is because this whole Daf is talking about a topic called Zen Ne Nevezelo Choser, which basically means one person benefits and the other person doesn't lose out. So, for example, I'm the owner. Well, the classic case that Gemara is discussing is squatting, and we'll. You know, there's loads of different other types of examples that we threw in some of them last time. There are others we can discuss as well, and we'll continue to go through the details of the topic. But as I say, just to lay out the basic case again for the purpose of review. So if I own a property which I'm not renting out anyway, i.e. I am lo choser, I lose nothing by somebody else living there because I'm not renting it out anyway, I have no use for this particular property, I'm unable to rent it or choose not to, whichever one it is, that is a little bit of a subject of debate, but let's just assume it doesn't matter for now, and somebody else comes along and lives there. They live there. So they are nene, they benefit from the fact that they are living there, and I lose nothing from the fact that they are living there, assuming that there is no damage done or anything like that. So then the question is, when you come to, when I take them, can I afterwards take them to Beit Din and say, I'd like you to pay me, they were there for a year, I'd like you to pay me now a year's rent, right? I've suddenly discovered that you've been living there for the last year, I'd like you to pay me a year's rent. So the Gemara that we did last time, we'll come back to a little bit, said that if, on Chof Amud Aleph, said basically if it's obvious, if the person would have, if I was looking for someone to rent there, right, so it's clear that I am in a sense chaser, then clearly you do have to pay. And if the person's getting no benefit, i.e. they could have lived anywhere, just happened to choose here, they have anywhere to live, then they don't have to pay. But the question was in this in-between case, and the Gemara concluded, quoted Rabbi, I think, whoever it was, we quoted Omar of Chistel Rami Bar Chama. Okay, I don't remember exactly who it was, but basically quoted, and we said that that yes, you would have to pay. Oh, sorry, excuse me, you would not have to pay. You'd be potter. Zenen of Zele Choser, potter. And did we talk about Midas Sodom? I can't remember if that was on the Gemara earlier or not. Yeah, yeah. Link to the city of Sodom. No, we didn't talk about that. Okay, so let's come back to that. So where is that in this Gemara here coming up? I might be on the next daf, actually. I might be on Chof Aleph when we get there. Otherwise, we'll throw it in from the Mishnah. Okay, let's see. Let's throw this all in. Okay, let's keep going in the Gemara, and we'll throw it in as if it's helpful as we go through. So I don't have a mark of where we actually left off. I have a feeling.
I've got it up. Shalachu be Rabbi Ami. It's about halfway down.
Shalachu be Rabbi Ami.
Just below Tashma Rabbi
Ami. Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, that sounds right. Kaf Amud Bet. So 20b. Yeah. Fine. Yeah, that sounds about right. So I think we had just talked about. We just talked about the house that fell down, right? A house with a duplex, right? So you have the house and one above, owned by different people, and they both fell down. So the question is, if let's say the person below doesn't build their house for whatever reason, so the other one, the one who owned the flat above, builds the lower one and lives in it, right? Because he doesn't have anywhere to live. So that was a case we talked about whether that was Zenen of a Zelo Choser or not. Let's come back to this. Let's come back to all of these. And one thing that we really didn't talk about, we started to talk a little bit about the halacha of this. Actually, let's do that. Before we get it back into the Gemara, let's talk a little bit about the broader topic. And I don't think we saw Okay, maybe we went to, okay, so let's see this Tosas at the top of the daf, because I don't think we saw that, and that links it to another Gemara, which is Midas Sodom, and that hopefully will help us understand this a little bit better. So again, just to lay this out, our Gemara had talked about a case of Zenen of Zele Choser, where one benefits and the other one doesn't lose, and we're talking about what we call B'di'eved, B'di'avad. It's already happened. The question is, can I claim money from this person for the benefit that they have received from my, whatever it might be, from my property, from my driveway? That, I think that's probably the easiest example nowadays. I have a nice driveway in the center of London, and I'm away. Let's say you go away on holiday for a few weeks, and I come back, and I discover that there's a car in my driveway. So I realize from the cameras that a fellow's been parking there for the last 3 weeks while I've been away. So I'd like to now charge him, right? That's a lot of money he's saved, he's benefited from. So that's the question. So the Gemara says there, so that's basically the case that the Gemara, it might be a little bit different, which we saw in Shulchan Aruch last time, but in principle, it would sound like Zenen of Zele Choser, I've lost nothing as a result of this, right? They've benefited, and therefore, they don't owe me anything. Now, does that mean that if I see an empty driveway, I can go and park in it? Not necessarily, okay? We haven't talked about Lichatchila, whether you're allowed to do it. We're only talking about now Bedieved, whether you have to pay. David, you have a question before we even start.
I'm just thinking that the owner of the driveway will probably be benefiting from the fact that it looked as though they were still there.
Okay, maybe. There you go. Okay, good one. Very interesting. Yeah. No, that's a not insignificant factor. That's also interesting. Interesting point. I mean, it depends. Joking aside, if you could really construct a case that showed that the owner actually benefited from it, in security, you could potentially even charge the owner, right? So you turn it around. You say, "Thank you for letting me use your driveway, and here's the bill." Maybe, but I think you'd have trouble constructing the case. But in theory, if you could prove it, if it was measurable sort of benefit, then maybe. Okay. So let's just point out.
You can't say that. It's the same as protection racket. I will look after your house. I need £200 a week. If you don't, I'm going to damage someone. Someone might damage your house.
I see. Okay, interesting. Right. Okay, yeah, I think you're probably right. Yeah. But let's say that wasn't. Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting thing. Right. It's sort of like an implicit threat, as it were. Yeah. Implicit threat. Right. Very good. Okay. Afil Lamanda Omar. So we're going to look at that Tosfot at the top, top on the right. So Ho is Hanis. Again, this is the Gemara, fleshing out the original point, which is that, clearly the person has received benefit, and therefore one might have thought that that you would have to pay. And Tosas points out, Afila Lamanda Omar, this is even according to the opinion, but Perek Kama de Baba Basra, so this is in the first chapter of Baba Basra, big link between Baba Kama Bo Metzia, Baba Basra, originally used to be one long Masechta, very long Masechta, and we split them up. Kofin Al Midas Sodom. So this opinion is that one should literally force or override their character trait of the people of Sodom, which we'll explain in just a moment. V'yahavinon lei echad mitzra. So that's talking about if I remember correctly, I think that's talking about a path or something, a pathway through somebody's property. I don't remember the exact case over there. We can look up the Gemara maybe another time. But the point is over there that there's a similar case of Zenen of Ezele Choser, one benefiting, and I don't lose out, even though this person is benefit. So he points out, Hocha Shahaya Yochel Lamono Mitchila. Over here, however, you could have stopped him from the beginning, Milodir Beveso, from staying in your house. Whereas over there, and yet it's still the same. Ulamanda Omar, and according to that opinion, Hossam Ma'alin Lei Kenichs. Do you know, actually, this is getting a little bit too much into the details of that discussion of Bava Basra, but I wanted to just, I think there's a, yes, okay, yeah. So let's just skip down towards the end of the Tosas, the last five lines. So the first word on the line is V'yesh Lomar. V'yesh Lomar, it's an acronym, right? It's got apostrophe there, v'yesh lomar, vav yud lamed, v'yesh lomar, and one might suggest, de lo domi, that it's not similar, hoil v'nehne machmas hachesron shahoya mitchila, since you benefit from the fact that there is an original loss, midid hava, excuse me, I've skipped ahead, midid hava ha, oh no, so I think I've chosen, I don't think this is the Tosis I intended to look at. The Tosis elsewhere. Okay, I remember, it could be, maybe it's the Tosis and Baba Basra. Okay, so my error, apologies, but I'm pretty sure, I thought it was over here, maybe we didn't see it last time. Either way, let's focus on one thing at a time. Now that we've talked about, now that we've quoted that Gemara and talked about Midas Sodom, what the Gemara is really telling us is that there is this character trait of the people of Sodom, which was, and actually the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says this. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that if you have the attitude of Sheli Sheli v'Shelach Shelach, right, that's no good. If I say what's mine is mine and what's yours it's yours, right, now, on the face of it, one might think that's wonderful. That's good, right? You mean you figured out you can't take what somebody else, and you know what belongs to you belongs to you, and what belongs to me. But to take it to an extreme, says the Mishnah, is no good. That's a bad character trait, because that's the character trait of the people of Sodom. Basically saying, you know, what I have this. It's not for sharing. It's never for anybody else's benefit. I've been given this, and I'm going to have this, and you have no right to any of it. And while that might be true in principle in terms of right, what the Gemara is saying with this phrase "kofin al midas sodom" is you have to override that. In a sense, we have this natural urge, this instinct to be a bit territorial and to say, "Well, this belongs to me, and therefore that's going to belong to me," even though I'm not losing out. I still want it to belong to me, and therefore I'm not going to give it over to you. And the sort of principle behind this is that. Is that in and of itself as a character trait is negative, and therefore the halacha in certain cases will almost force us to override that character trait and to feel a little bit more generous, and to force us to do that. Now, does that mean that you're allowed to take it on your own? Does that mean that you're allowed to use it elsewhere? Excuse me, that you're allowed to use it without permission, right, to start with, that I know that this driveway is free, or I know that this flat is free, right? Do you happen to know that somebody has a holiday home somewhere, and they never lock it up, right? It's in a very safe neighborhood, so they never bother locking their holiday home. So I decide, you know what, I know they're not going to be there, right? The member of my shul, I know that they're over here, I know that they've got a family permits for this weekend. I'm going to sneak off to the south of France, where their home is, and, you know, we'll make use of it while they're over here in London. So that's a separate question. So I thought that was what Tosfot over here discussed, and I don't remember where it is. But let's see it in the Shulchan Aruch briefly, and I'll see, maybe he quotes. I don't have the classic Shulchan Aruch, otherwise it would have a better source. But okay, so I think we looked at this briefly last time, but let's just do it again. Hadar b'chotzei chaver, one who lives in their friend's property, shalom idaita, without their knowledge. Okay, she'omar lo tsei, but the person said, i.e. the owner said, I'd like you to leave, right, this is my property, that v'lo yotza, if you don't leave at that point, then chayev liten lo schar, then you do have to pay them for that. V'im lo omar lo tsei, but let's say they didn't say, go out, let's say, they left the door open, they didn't make clear, then, im osa chotzer eina asuya leschar, if it's not designed to be, if it's not obvious that they would be collecting rent from anywhere else, or that they would be benefiting from this in any other way, eina tzarech lahalos leschar, then you don't need to give them any reward, any payment at all. Okay, and that's the principle that we've talked about until now. Afal pisha hotzi es habaal, es baal habayis, baal korcham in habayis, v'hu darba. Right, even though you... even though shehotzi as a baal habayis, baal korcho min habayis, right? Even though, in a sense, that the owner was removed on their own, and you end up living there. Va'afilu haya rogel askiro. Let's leave that for now. Afal pisha derech ze hadar liskar mokom la'atmo. Zenene v'zelechosin. Fine. V'dafka, this is the Ramona. V'dafka shekvar darbo. This is when they're talking about a case when you're already living there. The person's already there. Do they now have to pay? Avalo yuchal lekufo lechatchila shi'anichelu l'adarbo. It says you're not allowed to come along and say, I know that you have this place, I'm going to live there, and you can't stop me from living there because you don't benefit. Afal bi dekofin al midasnom. Even though the halacha says, yes, you should overcome the owner. In a sense, the halacha does encourage the owner, not just encourage the owner, force the owner to overcome this urge of feeling territorial by claiming back the money, right? That much they will do. Shazenen v'zele choser. Honi mili bedovar, that's only talking about to ibo'i lehonos, lo yucha lehonos. Right? That's talking about where, if you wanted to benefit from it, you would not be able to benefit from it. Al b'chiyai gavno, but now in this particular case, de ibo'i ba'al achotzer lehonos, he does want to benefit from it. He wants to either rent it out, right? Or he wants to be able to use it. Then, in Kofin, Osa Lazas, Bechinam, then you cannot force them to use it, right? Which is a very significant thing, very significant to distinguish between these two. And yet, there are those who disagree, right? Or I wouldn't say those. There's probably a unique opinion that says that you would be able to, right? That in a sense, if I own a... Let's come back to our drive. I always find the driveway example is a very easy one because you lose very little. When you live in somebody's house, there's always inevitable damage that ends up happening, right? Little things never quite the same when you've had people over, whether it's the sheets or the walls or, you know, whatever it is, the bathroom, something, you know, there's always a little noticeable signs. It's never quite the same. But a driveway, you know, how much do you really lose? A little bit of use of your driveway. So, if that's the, according to this opinion, I would be able to go and use someone's driveway, because I choose to, right? Because I want to get benefit from it. And I know that they're not losing out. I know that there is no downside for this person. Right. Could happen on our road. This is a regular discussion where we have. There's a school on the road, primary school. Right. So when it comes to pickup time, sometimes if parents are in a rush, right, park across the driveway. Yes. So let's say they don't park across the driveway. Let's just go in the driveway. Right. Park in the driveway. Why not? It's open. No one else is there. So just park in the driveway, and maybe they could say, "I know you're not using it." Right. In the sense of, I'm forcing you to do that. So what? Majority opinion is you're not allowed to do that. Okay. You're definitely not allowed to do that. But there is this minority opinion that says you would. You would be allowed to do that. And in a sense, while we're talking about this concept of kofin al midasnom, one might ask, why not? Right? What's the distinction? Right? Once the halacha says you can't pay, you're not paying for it, why? And we're saying the person should in a sense overcome that sense of saying no and they're not allowed to charge money as a result of that. Why would the person not be able to force them to do that? Any suggestions, any thoughts? Why not?
I mean, why the owner should object?
Well, we know why the owner, in a sense, the halacha is telling us the owner shouldn't object.
Right,
that's what it's saying. In a sense, it's saying the owner should not object, assuming there genuinely is no benefit, right? No loss. Assuming there is no loss. And I actually say that occasionally. Let's say I'm on my way out, and I know I'm leaving the driveway, I'm not coming back. I say to, you know, sometimes if I see a parent there, I say, feel free to park across the driveway. You can do that. That's no problem.
Read the book, you see.
No, but that's. But I think that's what it's there. It's there to encourage us to overcome that. You say, if you're not going to lose out anyway, then why not? We've had other situations where they park across the driveway without asking, and I'm late there, and I am there, and I'm picking up. So that one I'm not so happy about. But there is a loss, right? There is, even if it's not a financial loss, as you know, that's considered to be a loss. That unpleasantness, that difficulty. But once the Torah has told us that, why can't I, as the driver, say, well, since you're forced anyway, the halacha is telling you that you should do this, why can't it tell you to do this to the extent that I can do it regardless of whether I ask? You know,
it's not like forcing someone to do a mitzvah.
That's an interesting question. Is it like forcing someone to do a mitzvah? We do have a concept of what we call kofin achayoma rotzani, that you force somebody until they say, I would like to do it, right? To push somebody into doing that. That's a rare example, because you have to...
That's almost like with someone who's reluctant to give a gift.
Exactly. So that's the example that's given. But again, even that needs to be done... It's entrusted to a bet din to do with wisdom that the person will actually say that, right? And in a sense, you some people will and some people won't, and you have to judge. And some situations will be able to force the person to do that and not. So you need that sort of ability to do that. We shy away from doing that as a general rule. It's more commonly applied to children sometimes, or to sort of youngsters, where we say you can force them to do certain things in order to habituate, you know, in order to habituate.
That's teaching them, isn't it?
Well, sometimes it is, and sometimes, again, depends how much it's forced. Unfortunately, I've seen this, you know, where a parent sort of pushes it so much in a negative way that actually the child rebels against it. So it also needs to be done with wisdom and carefully. But you're saying generally, I don't think we do. Do we force somebody to do it? I'm not sure we ever really say we force somebody to do a mitzvah. I'm not sure that's the same as this. Here we're saying the problem with forcing somebody to do a mitzvah is that if they're totally dead set against it, might well not be part of the point of the mitzvah is to. What we call mitzvah trichas kavana, exactly. You need to have intention to fulfill this in a positive sense. Over here, maybe not. I think there's a couple of routes you go. Either you say, which I have seen, either you say that the, in a sense, to take money as a result, b'dieved, is one thing. But over here, if I say I am going to live on your property or I'm going to park in your driveway, what I'm doing more than taking away, more than lo choser, you might redefine it as yes choser, you are losing out, because what I've done in effect is taken away your ownership of this, right? Not just taken away the benefit that you know, not just taken away potential rent, which you weren't getting anyway, and that's therefore non-existent, but you've gone a step further now and taken away the actual ownership of it, i.e., My what is the point of owning something if anybody else can come along and just use it however they want, right?
Squatters on an empty house.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the example that we're talking about. Squatters on an empty house. If we were to go so far as to say that they could even force the owner, if they weren't going to benefit anyway from doing it, to use that property, then what we've effectively done is we've confiscated the property, right? What we've said is the property doesn't actually belong to you, right? You don't have the ownership over it because you don't even have the right to choose, right? You don't even have the right to choose. So it's a very delicate balance. And again, you've always got to think about it from the different perspectives. Are we asking the question from the perspective of the owner, or are we asking the question from the perspective of the user? And actually, I quite like this topic because it does show us how much we are expected to both want to give, in a sense, right? From the perspective of the owner, you are supposed to want to share. You're supposed to want to give to the person, and therefore you don't claim back money if you weren't going to lose that anyway. But from the perspective of the user, you're expected to respect the rights of the owner. You're expected to recognize that what they own belongs to them, and therefore you can't just use that without asking them or paying them or whatever it might be, right? So in a sense, it really does shift in that sense, and therefore that's a significant difference. I think we spoke about a couple of other. We left off actually with an interesting example, which I think is less clear. But, well, I guess it depends who you are. Some people say this is an exact case of it, and others maybe draw differences. But I think probably one of the most common examples nowadays is using accounts, right? Using somebody else's account. So using Netflix accounts or Amazon Prime accounts or those sorts of things, right? Where you're using somebody else's login details in order to, well, again, so potentially you could argue that the company's not losing out. Lo choser, right? Maybe they're not losing out. Doesn't matter, the person has the account already. But you're zenen, you're benefiting, right? So maybe, again, you're not, some have suggested that that's a classic example. Others have said otherwise. Another really common example, and many of these cases might depend also on the small print. Now, once upon a time, there wasn't as much small print, right? In times of the Gemara, there weren't contracts, you know, reams and reams and reams of paper of things explaining what the rules are and what the rules aren't. But nowadays, it's probably small print might circumvent a number of these issues. But for example, another case that comes up is moving seats at a sports match or at whatever, a concert or a theater or whatever it might be, right? Are you allowed to move seats? Are you allowed to move to better seats? I paid for the, you know, £10 seats, and but I can see in the front row that these people didn't show up. So once they didn't show up in the front row, can I move and sit in their seat in the front row? So again, might be a difference between whether you'd be charged. What seems clear from the Gemara is you're not going to be charged, right? That the theatre can't turn around afterwards and said, we noticed that although you paid for the cheap seats, you've now moved into the more expensive seats. We'd like you to pay the difference, right? And that's clear from the Gemara. They can't do that. But whether or not you should do that seems to be majority opinion in Shulchan Aruch that one should not do that. Unless it's understood, as I said, so a lot of this might come down to the small print. And again, if the owner of the theatre were there, or the owner of the sports venue, they might say they should, in a sense, allow you to do it. Yes, look confused.
Well, because I'm just thinking of the example on the train, for instance. If you go to second class,
ticket, okay,
and
yes,
you see that the first class carriages are empty.
Yes, are you allowed to? They will charge you.
Yeah, well, that's their rules.
That's interesting.
Well, I'm sure that's their bylaws. So
yeah, but I
didn't even know that.
That you're saying that the theatre can't charge you the
difference. Oh, again,
you sit in the better seat. Why shouldn't you pay the extra?
Because that's Zeno and Zelo Choser. What would they have gained? What would they have gained as a result of that?
More money.
But they haven't, because the people even paid for the ticket already and didn't show up.
Yeah, I'm talking about more the case where that seat is just vacant.
Either way, let's say it was.
You
didn't know until you got there.
You see, if you occupied the seats, opposed to the theatre's policy is that if they come at the interval, then they're allowed in and they can.
Right. Okay. But again, you're describing all cases of lo choser, of yes choser, where they are losing out. Yeah. But let's say the scenario is that the way they're not losing out.
So you think the train shouldn't be able to charge you extra for sitting in the first class?
Again, the Gemara. So the Shulchan Aruch says that if the Hadar b'chatzar chaver, if you do it, and the person says to you leave, let's say you live in someone's house, and the person comes along and says to you leave, and you don't leave, then they're allowed to charge you from that point. So potentially, if they, let's say they write, let's say they have a sign on the seat that says reserved or something, you know, or on the door of the train, it says first class, you know, or all they have to do is put up a sign that says, you know, you're not allowed in here without it, and then they would be able to charge, because then they are saying, please leave if you don't have the correct ticket. Then they would be able to charge. Right? Right.
Have you ever tried moving forward into business or first class on an aeroplane?
Yeah, that they probably wouldn't let. Well, once upon a time, you know, again, rules are clamped down a lot as well. There used to be much more flexibility. But 10 years ago, I used to fly very regularly, and you always used to pay for regular seats, and then occasionally, you know, you would get lucky and get the extra. No, well, not you wouldn't get an upgrade to business or first, but just you get the extra legroom seats. You know, you'd be able to see, oh yes, you know, get those. Now they charge for those, right? So now they've started. You can't get them unless you charge for them. Although we did have, we managed to get I can't remember, on our most recent flight. They did give us the extra legroom seats. We had a funny situation with the extra legroom this time, because we were flying with a baby and they won't put babies in the extra legroom. And although we didn't pay, it was a very full flight, so they put one of us in the extra legroom, and then we swapped one seat there for two seats elsewhere. I can't remember. It was a whole business that we managed to figure out. Either way, I think that's a good example, David. So if the train explicitly says you are not allowed in here unless you have the right ticket, then probably they could charge, right? But short of that, I think the point over here, and again, this is the Gemara is talking in cases where there's not a lot else that is made clear. So fields and things like that, which seem to be left derelict. Actually, maybe this is a good example. I used to get very frustrated by this. There was in a previous shul like a building, I was going to call it a shed, but it was a larger sort of building, small building, you know, backing on to the shul, which was owned by the council and had been left derelict. And the council, every time the council was approached, they wanted exorbitant amounts of money to use it. I mean, like ridiculous amounts of money. And it was just, it was just left derelict. So while I think that it was open. There was no sort of locks on it or fence around it or anything sort of keeping people out. While I think that lichat chila, as we said, one would not be allowed to use it, right? Because you're not allowed to lichat chila go and use someone's property as a result. I'm always wary to Paskin and Choshen Mishpat because I don't know it well enough, but I would think that would be a classic example where if you did end up, if you did use it, if someone did use it, I don't think they would be able to be charged. Again, in English law, maybe they would. I don't know. I wouldn't want to comment on that. But in Halacha, I don't think they'd be able to charge for that, right? It's literally sitting derelict. There's no obvious sign that says you can't use it. And there's no loss as a result, right? There's literally no loss. In fact, if anything, it would probably be better maintained. I think it's probably getting worse as a result of the not being used. I think it's probably plants growing through it and all sorts of stuff that's that was making it worse. Either way, okay. So that's a little bit more background, a little bit more in terms of the actual topic itself. Let's jump into the Gemara and see. There's going to be other ways that the Gemara is going to slice this as we go through it. Okay, Shalchuha bei Rabbi Ami. So they sent the following question, again, based on the same topic. Omar, Rabbi Ami says as follows. V'chima osolo, right? Oh, sorry, this is picking up in the middle of the previous example. So again, just to remind ourselves, the previous example was where you had a one house on top of another, right? And they both fell down. The person below, obviously the person who owned the flat above, cannot build or can't build their own flat, what they had before, until the person downstairs builds first. But the person downstairs didn't build. So the one below ended up building on their own. They chose to build, and they lived in the downstairs one. They lived downstairs, because they only built one. So they built the one downstairs. Okay?
I've lost where you actually are. Where how far
down? Shalchuha bei Rabbi Ami is... It's about two-thirds of the way down. It's the first...
Opposite Tama.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Middle of the line. Exactly. Okay. Shalchu bei Rabbi Ami Omar. So Rabbi Ami says as follows. V'chima asolo. Right? What did he do to him? Uma chisro. How did he lose out? Uma hiziko. How did he damage him? Right? I.e., why is he paying back? The Gemara had said that he pays back in his he pays back in his rent, as it were, right? In a sense, the rent is what pays it back. So he wants to know, well, what does it make a difference? Why is he paying back at all, right? Why does he owe him anything? And Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba responds as follows: Omar Nisyashev Bedover, right? Nisyashev Bedover. Let's look into it. Hodar shalchuha kameid Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. So he said he didn't have an answer, or he didn't have a clear answer in that moment. They wanted to try and figure it out together. Then they sent the question as follows: kameid Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Omar kulei hai shalchuli vazli. Right? Why are you sending me so many questions? Ilu ashkechei ba timer. Right? Lo shal chana lehu, right? I.e., if I had an answer, right? Ilu ashkeche, if I would have found it, then a reason to be exempt or to be liable, right? One way or the other, a proof one way or the other. Lo shalchanalu, would I not have sent it to you? Right? It's a rhetorical question. Would I not have sent you an answer if I would have if I wouldn't have had the answer to that question? Okay, and therefore, it was a very silly place. I didn't realize we left off. We left off very much in the middle of what we were talking about earlier. So it was not the cleverest place to leave off. But basically, it was a conclusion of what had been discussed earlier. Rabbi Ami, they had been discussing this question. They'd sent the question to Rabbi Ami. Then Rabbi Chiya bar Abba had asked him. He'd asked Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Rabbi Chiya bar Abba had said, let's discuss it. And then he'd sent him again the question. And he said, why are you sending it to me again? When I find an answer, when I figure it out, then we'll discuss it again. But I don't have another answer. And so it was left a little bit, a little bit up in the air. Okay, as I said, not a great place to leave off from last time. Move on to Itmar. Itmar in the next section. Okay, Itmar, let's... again, the following teaching from Rav Kahana and Rav Yochanan. Rav Kahana Omer Rav Yochanan said in the name of Rav Yochanan, Eina tzorich lahalos lo schar. He doesn't need to pay him anything. Okay, he doesn't need to pay him anything. Rabbi Avohu Omer, Rabbi Avohu says in the name of Rav Yochanan, tzorich lahalos lo schar. Yes, you do have to pay him, right? We do have to. This is again going back to our original question of Zena and of Zele Choser. Okay, so we, at the moment it's Machlokas. We've presented it. I guess we've jumped ahead and come to a conclusion. But over here we have a little bit of a doubt. It's unclear to us. Omar of Papa. Rav Papa says as follows: Hod Rabbi Avohu lav beferush itmar and a michlola itmar. The problem was that Rabbi Avohu hadn't said it clearly. Rabbi Avohu hadn't made it clear, and a michlola itmar. They figured it out from his actions. Right, his actions. Why? Why did not? Because we have the following Mishnah. Notal even okoro shel hekdesh. So a little bit of background. If you give something to the temple, if something belongs to the temple, whether it's an animal that's going to be used as a korban, or even just a stone in this case, or a stick, right, a plank of wood, anything which is owned by the temple is going to be used by the temple. If I get benefit from that, that falls into a different category. It's not called gazela in the same way. It's not theft. It's called me'ila. Okay, me'ila behekdash means you're benefiting, and it's a stronger thing. There's a higher level. Even just benefiting from it can cause you to violate this me'ila. This prohibition, Torah prohibition, and here's the question. So the Mishnah teaches us. So that's why we're talking about shel hekdesh, something that belongs to hekdesh. So who takes this stone, right? Hari zelo ma'al. Someone takes a stone or a plank, shel hekdesh. Hari zelo ma'al. That's not considered me'ila, right? It's not considered benefiting. Why not? So I think Rashi clarifies who we're talking about over here. Rashi says to begizbar askinon. We're talking about the person who runs the show there. We're talking about like the gabbai, you know, I wouldn't quite call him the caretaker, but the person who's there was someone who needed to be appointed over the temple stores, you know, and how it was used and things like that. Maybe like the executive, you know, or the some sort of position where you were in charge of. Overseeing all of the materials and things that were going to be used, and therefore, since that person has a little bit more leeway with regards to what they can and can't do with things that belong to the temple, because they were running the storehouse, and therefore, if that person took it, then Harizel lo ma'al. That's not good, because he didn't move it anywhere else, right? He didn't do anything significant with it that's going to be considered me'ila. But nosna lechaver. Let's say he gave it to his friend. Then hu ma'al, right? You might think that the friend is the one who's taking it. So I'm the gizbar. I'm taking out the stone from the temple, and then I hand it over to my friend. So you might say, if you're the friend, oh yes, excuse me, you might say if you're the Gizbar, well, I'm not taking it, you're the other person's the one who's stealing it. So then, no, the Gemara says, who, or the Mishnah really, it said, who ma'al, the Gizbar, this person who's in charge, you're the one who steals, v'chaveiro lo ma'al, his friend is not considered to have stolen from the temple, to be utilizing this ma'ila, utilizing this hekdesh, taking advantage of a holy object, b'na'a l'soch beso harizelo. So the Gemara then it clarifies, b'na'a l'soch beso harizelo ma'al, ad sheyodur tachtov. But let's say you put it into your house, right? If he uses this stone, he takes it home and he puts it over his puts it over his skylight as a, let's say, plugs up a hole. He's got a hole in his roof, and it's getting a little bit cold, or the rain is coming in. So he puts the stone over this hole. So then, that's considered me'ila, but the Gemara clarifies, harizeh lo ma'al ad sheyodor tachtov. It's only once you sit underneath it that's considered to be taking it away. Why? Ad sheyodor tachtov shove pruta. And you basically, I don't know how you would calculate this, but you basically, you receive the equivalent benefit of a small amount of money. Shove pruta is always a tiny amount of money. It's the sort of smallest halachic amount of money that would make you liable for something usually, and so that's you. So however you figure that out, however you calculate it, I don't know whether it's the lack of rain that comes in. Either way, once you get that benefit, then you would be liable. Then you would be liable for this me'ila. And all of this is really just a side point to come back to the opinion of Rabbi Avahu, which we'll get to, excuse me, Rabbi Avahu in just a moment. But just to point out, okay, either way. Oh yes, yeah, okay, yes. Yeah. So Rashi says an interesting thing here. So Rashi says, oh, it's on the next part. Okay, the next part. Let's go just a little bit further. So you put it on top of your house, and again you sit underneath it. Then you are chav shavah pruta. Omar Shmuel clarifies, v'hu shehinicha al pi aruba. That's where you put it on top of this skylight, as we said before, and you didn't fix it in. Rashi says you didn't fix it in. V'yosev. No, that's the next part. Okay. So Rashi clarifies, Husha hinicha al pi aruba, you put it on top of the skylight, you didn't fix it into your home, i.e. you took this stone, but you didn't actually, I don't know, drill it in or screw it in or cement it in or anything like that. Because if that was the case, then even before you sit underneath it, you're already getting, well, it doesn't even matter whether you get benefit, then it's considered to be, Rashi says at that point it's considered to be a shinoi, and once you make a change in the object, i.e. you fix it into a building, making a change is also considered to be stealing it in that sense, or benefit, it might not be a full benefit, but you are you're considered to have done me'ila at that point. So if you just simply lay it down and then get benefit from it, then the benefit is the point at which you're going to be liable, whereas if you fix it in, then the point at which you fix it in, that's the point from which you will now be liable. V'yosiv Rabbi Avahu kamei. Now we come back to Rabbi Avahu to try and figure out what his opinion was. V'yosiv Rabbi Avahu kamei de Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Avahu sat in front of Rabbi Yochanan, sat with Rabbi Yochanan. V'ka'omar mishmei de Shmuel, and said in the name of Shmuel, Zos Omeres, this teaches us, Shehador or Hador b'chotzer chaveiro, that one who lives in their friend's house, Shalom idaita, without his knowledge, Tzorich lahalos lo schar, then you need to pay back. V'shosak, Rabbi Yochanan was quiet. V'shosak lei, didn't say anything. V'shosak lei, didn't say anything. Ihu savar, Rabbi Avahu understood midashosak modilei, right? That since Rabbi Yochanan didn't respond, he agreed with him. What he was saying was, I agree, right? And therefore that he didn't respond. Velohi, but he misunderstood. Ashguchi lo ashgach bei. No, Rabbi Yochanan didn't agree with what he said. Kidarabba, da omar rabba. He seemed to be following the opinion of Rabba. As Rabba said, Hekdesh shalomidas kehedyot Midda'as Domi, excuse me, sorry, it's not that he didn't agree with him on the bottom line, but he disagreed with him on the reasoning, right? What he, Omar Rabba had said, Hekdesh shalom midda'as, kehedyot midda'as Domi, right? That when you are doing it with Hekdesh, when you are benefiting, in this particular case, from Hekdesh, from something holy, i.e. this stone from the temple, you've taken the stone, not literally a stone out of the temple, but a stone that would be used for the temple, right? Then, and you do that without knowledge. Shalom midas. Hekdesh shalom midas. Are you without intention? That is the same as somebody else doing it intentionally. I.e., even though you accidentally did this, let's say you laid the stone on your roof and you went and sat underneath it without the intention of benefiting from it per se. Since you, what the Mishnah is telling us, this is the opinion of Rabbah. Rabbah's explaining that this Mishnah doesn't prove that you have to pay back. What this Mishnah is saying is something totally separate. This Mishnah is teaching us something from Hekdesh. Okay, let's just take a step back and clarify again. We were unclear on the opinion of Rabbi Avahu. We thought that the opinion of Rabbi Avahu is that you have to pay, right? We thought that's the opinion. And it's based on the following Mishnah. Based on the Mishnah to do with Hekdesh. And basically what we had understood from this Mishnah was that not the opinion of Rabbi Avahu. We're confused on the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, right? We have two opinions in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. So one says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan you do have to pay. One says you don't have to pay. Okay. So the question is which is the correct one? So we clarify with the following story. Rabbi Avahu had been the one who said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that you do have to pay. Right? Why was that? Because he'd not figured it out from Rabbi Yochanan saying it explicitly. He had understood it from an implication of Rabbi Yochanan. And the Gemara went on to explain the story, because the Mishnah had said that if this person who runs the Beis HaMikdash had taken a stone and sat under it, then they would be liable from the moment they sat under it. And it sounds like that might be even unintentionally, okay? So Rabbi Avahu had suggested that the reason why that person in charge of the stone would be liable was because Hadar b'chotzer chaver shalom midato tzorich l'halos l'schar, just like this gizbar would be liable. So to anybody who does something without the other person's knowledge, if I live in my friend's house without them knowing, I also need to pay them back. So that's what this Mishnah is teaching me. And at that point, Rabbi Yochanan was quiet. So he understood Rabbi Yochanan's quiet to mean that he agreed with him. He acquiesced his position. Whereas we explain, no, that's not necessarily the case. Rabbi Yochanan might have seen it differently. Rabbi Yochanan felt that this Mishnah, or may have felt, that this Mishnah, the reason why the Gizbar is liable in this case, even though he did it without knowledge, is because when we're talking about Hekdesh, the expectation is higher, okay? And we're talking about holy objects from the temple, so even if you do it without knowledge, without intending to, shalom midaito, then, shalom midas, then it's kehedyot midas domi, it's as though you do it with da'as. I've misread, okay, excuse me, my mistake. I realized this whole misreading the Gemara. Just to clarify, when we talk about shalom midaito and midaito, when we're talking about without knowledge and with knowledge, we're not talking about the knowledge of the person who's sitting under it, my mistake. We're talking about the knowledge of the owner. Who is the owner in this case? God, right? We're talking about the owner being God. So shalom midaito means what the comparison is, that in a sense, the question is, That's really what the Gemara is explaining. The Gemara concluding, saying there is no such thing as shalom midaito, right, for God. You can't do it without God's knowledge, right, without the owner's knowledge. Clearly, it's always going to be with God's knowledge, right? It's always going to be with the owner's knowledge. And therefore, when we're talking about Hekdesh, that doesn't work. So you can't just say it's like Hadar b'chotzer chaver shalom midaito, when you live in somebody's house without their knowledge. You are doing it with knowledge, right? The owner knows, because the owner's God in this case. So therefore, kehedyot midas nomi, that's the case that we're dealing with. That's the scenario, I should say. So that doesn't help us. And again, we've still got this lack of clarity with regards to the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. Or in fact, we seem to be, so far as I can see, we seem to be leaning towards Rabbi Yochanan, saying that that you don't need to pay back. Right? You don't need to pay back because we lost our proof for that. Okay, the Gemara is now gonna again continue with this doubt and try and bring in another proof or another discussion on this topic. Okay, Shalach Le Rabbi Abba. We're now on to Chof Aleph Amud Aleph, top line, 21a. Shalach Le Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda Lamori Bar Mar. Okay, so they sent as follows. He has the following question. Hadar b'chotzer chaver shalom yidaita. One who lives in their friend's property without his knowledge. Tzorich lahalos l'schar ola. Same question we had before. Do you have to pay back or not? Adahachi. Before he was able to answer, right? He didn't. What happened? Noch nafshei de Rav Huna. Rav Huna passed away. Okay, Rav Huna passed away. Omale Rabba bar Rav Huna. Hochi omar Abba Mori. Rabba bar Rav Huna, Rabba his son, the son of Rav Huna, said, this is what my father would have said, or this is what my father did say, right? He didn't have actually hear the answer. Mishmei the Rav in the name of Rav. Eino tzorich lahalos lo schar. You don't need to pay back. Okay, you don't need to pay back. That's the halacha. So that's the, again, also seems to be conclusive. Presumably these two Kamaras are sort of pushing us in that direction. We jumped the gun. We've already gone to the Shulchan Aruch to point out that's the conclusion is that you don't have to pay back. But our Gemara was dealing with a doubt of this, and again we've brought one knocking down of a proof the other direction, and one over here where Rav Huna, we say in the name of Rav Huna pretty conclusively that you do need to, you do not need to pay back in that particular case. Vahasocher bayis meruvin ma'aleh schar l'shimon. Okay, someone who lives in Reuven's property, you pay Shimon the money for doing that. Why? It doesn't make any sense, right? One owns the property and you're paying the other person. Why? Shimon ma'avite. What did he do? Right? What did he do? Why should he get to take this payment? Hochi kama. This is what it means. Nimtza bayis shel Shimon ma'aleh schar. Right, if you find out that the property belongs to Shimon, then you have to pay him back. So, Tarte, right? There's two things that this Gemara is teaching us. One, basically, I think the point is that you lived in a property, you thought it belonged to Reuven. Right, you lived somewhere. You thought this was Reuven's property. You were planning to pay him, right? Then you discovered it belongs to Shimon. So the Gemara says you need to pay Shimon, right? You thought it belonged to one. Turns out it belonged to the other. That's what you need to do. Nimtza bayis shel Shimon. That's what it really means. It doesn't mean hazocher bayis mei Reuven. It means nimtza bayis shel Shimon. Then you pay. Then you pay Shimon. You find out that it belonged to him. Tarte. Two things we learn. Ha dekayma la agra. Ha. Delo kaima la agra, right? We're in a sense we're teaching two things. One is where it was designated for rental, and the other case where it wasn't designated for rental, i.e., is this zenene v'ze lo choser, or is it zenene v'ze choser, right? I.e., would Shimon be losing out as a result of this, right? That's the thrust of this Gemara. Itmar Nami, an additional teaching. Omer Rav Chia bar Avin, Omer Rav. Va'omri la, Omer Rav Chia bar Avin, Omer Rav Huna. So whether it was Rav or Rav Huna, one of them was said in his name. Hadar b'chatzah chavera shalom yidaita. If you live in somebody's property without their knowledge, ainat tzorich lahalos l'schar, you do not need to pay them back, as we've said all the way through. V'hasocher bayis mibnei ha'ir, but if you rent it from the local townspeople, from everybody together, male sechar lebailim, you do need to pay back to the owners, right? What does that mean? So again, we've got to figure this out. Bailim mayavid tayu, right? What? Why? Why are you? What do they do? What do they do? It sounds like you're renting it from everybody. It sounds like it's a communal property. It belongs to everybody. Again, the same sort of case that we had before. You thought you were renting a communal property. You thought this belonged to everybody together, and then you realized it had private owners. So then you need to pay back the private owners. Then you pay back the bailim. You pay back the private owners. Tarte, again, in both sorts of cases, tarte, the same sort of thing. Whether it would have been rented out, whether it wouldn't have been rented out. Why? So I think both of these sorts of cases, I think what the Gemara is basically pointing out over here is as follows. Where in a sense you didn't do it. Let's just clarify. We've been talking all the way through where a person lived somewhere and wasn't going to pay any rent at all. Okay, you weren't going to pay any rent at all. Over here in these particular cases, you were going to pay rent. You just thought it was going to go to the wrong person, right? So my intention was to pay Reuven, right, in the first case. Now it turns out that Shimon was the owner. So maybe. Actually, this is a very common. I don't want to misapply this, but I think maybe this is the following case. Oh, we've had a similar sort of thing, okay? Like this. Let's say you. I don't want to overstate this, but I would think this is what the Gemara is saying. Let's say I lived somewhere. I'm pretty sure. Okay, we're gonna stop after this case. So let's leave this off and confirm over the week that this is what it's actually talking about. But I think this is I don't want to say a common case, but something similar to this happened to us actually. So somebody lives in a property. Okay, they think they're paying the owner. It turns out they're not paying the owner. Right. So now the owner comes along and says, "You're living in my property, right? I'd like to pay." So there they have to pay. Right, they have to pay the owner. They pay the owner for the rent. So I think that's what the Gemara is saying over here. You have to pay the owner. Why do you have to pay the owner? Because it wasn't Zenen of Zelo Choser. You in a sense you were intending to pay, right? You did have the intention to pay. You did pay somebody else. Now, you should get the money back from that fellow, right? And if you can find him, then you can get the money back from him. Betzin will definitely say, you know, he's a thief, there's no question about that. But as the owner of the property, I have the right to collect rent from you directly. My beef is not with him. I don't know who this intermediary is, but I have beef with you. You've been living in my property. I collect rent from you. Then you can go get your money back. Or even if you never paid him, let's say you never paid him, maybe you just want to come along and argue as follows. You say, okay, I had intended to pay him because he's a friend of mine. Now that I realize he's not even the owner, so I don't want to pay at all, right? Maybe it was lo choser. Maybe let's take it a step further and say, You might think that they could come along to Beis Din and say, I wasn't planning on paying that person. I was planning to pay Reuven. Reuven was my friend. Now I discover it's Shimon's property, so I didn't think I should pay at all because Shimon, you know, he didn't. My relationship wasn't with him. It's just like Dor B'chotzer Chaver Shalomidaita, right? I lived there in the same way that we said before. If I were to live here accidentally, if I were to live here without his knowledge, right? Even though I shouldn't have done it. Then I wouldn't have to pay him, so why should I have to pay him now? Right? We never had a relationship, we never made an agreement in advance, I shouldn't have to pay him. The Gemara says, no, in that case, you do have to pay him, right? You do have to pay him. You had intention to live there, to pay rent, and therefore you do have to pay for that, for those particular examples.
Like an unlawful subletting.
Yes, yeah, yeah, it's a little bit like, yes, that was the case we had, we've had that before, big pay.
Where the tenant had no right to sublet.
Yes.
Takes your rent and then disappears, and the real landlord comes along and says, I haven't been paid.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah. Well, or they do pay back, but they're still subletting, yeah. Subletting at a larger, you know, sons of the subletting at a higher rate, okay. Or something, yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's a big problem. Okay. All right, so let's leave it there. We're gonna cut. So again, we're up to. Let me just mark down where we're up to. Actually, we did this itmar. We did this first itmar. We probably left off in the middle once again. Itmar nami. Yeah, I think we did leave off in the. Okay, well let's we'll wrap this up properly. next time, but we'll go from Omar of Schara. Omar of Schara next time. Just mark it up. Okay. I think that should work. Let's just confirm.